get a second chance. You don't get a second chance at recording. So
oh, that's great.
Well, go ahead.
I just listened to your what you put out today and about your channel.
Yeah, I thought it was time to put something out because I regularly get comments about, you know, what's this guy doing? So I thought, well, maybe this will help some people understand what I'm doing.
No, I think it's a great idea. It's really, really great.
Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You've got all this stuff behind you. You're almost got a pastor's office here.
This is actually the book room. My husband doesn't have many vices, but one of them is collecting books. And so this is, and these are generations of books. So he inherits books. And this is a bust of Einstein here that his grandfather made. The myth is that from life. So so we have really? A lot of books and a lot of art. Yeah, yeah.
That's so cool.
It's very cool.
That is very cool.
Some other time I'll have to tell you about his family because it's really quite amazing. Talk about splitting during the war and things like that. Just really.
Oh wow! You've whet my appetite already.
he's actually taking a class at Columbia. He's on his way home right now, because he wants to write his family history. And this part is about Turkey, and his grandfather on the other side had to leave Germany because he wrote anti-Nazi tracts. He was an economics professor.
Wow.
And then he was jailed. And then the second time he was going to be put in jail, he went to Turkey, which was modernizing at the time.
Yeah.
And taught at the, anyway, it's fascinating stories. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Really amazing. Well, yeah. What stories do you have to tell me about you? I mean, I mean, you've been writing, you know, you've been dropping notes and stuff for a while. So fill me in a little bit.
So so I wanted to say, you know, you talked about how people find you. So I found you, of course, through Jordan Peterson, but I found Jordan Peterson through the Babylon Bee. They had a meme that said, Jordan Peterson becomes the first honorary Christian baptized by the Southern Baptist Convention or something like that. I can't find out who this guy is. And then after I listened to him for a lot of hours and I was Googling around, you know, Jordan Peterson and Christianity and he popped up. So,
okay. Yeah, okay.
Good stuff.
Well, why? So you found Jordan through the Babylon Bee. Why did you get interested in Peterson? I mean, what about him sort of grabbed you?
Well, part of it is that, you know, it has a little bit to do with my faith journey. So maybe I'll tell you about that and how it works. Because I really believe in some way psychology has to figure in this a lot, you know, and I think he has very plain spoken ideas about how the world works and how relationships work. And so I just really resonated with them. But so I was raised in a Catholic family and we were real Catholic. So we all went to Catholic school until I rebelled in high school and, you know, went to public school with the pagans and stuff like that. I don't think I met people who weren't Catholic until then. My father was a lector, you know, he read at church and, my mom wasn't too involved with doing that kind of stuff, but we went to church every Sunday and, you know, we did the whole Catholic thing, I don't know if it's Tim Keller or maybe C.S. Lewis who says, you know, people fall away from Christianity when they want to start doing the stuff that you're not supposed to do.
There's a lot of truth to that.
That's when I fell away, you know, and later in high school and then in college. And I got into a lot of stuff, you know, drugs and drinking and, you know, that whole thing, sex, drugs and rock and roll, as they say.
Yeah.
But I completed school. I'm a pharmacist. So okay. That was amazing. You know, I stopped doing some of that stuff in the middle, but. When my professor handed me my diploma, I had to repeat a year, by the way. He said, I don't know how you did it.
Hardly a ringing endorsement.
Exactly. But the thing was that, you know, years later when I said, you know, I don't know that I should have this job, you know, and a good friend of mine said, well, God must have wanted you to have this job. Because otherwise you wouldn't have had it. So I moved, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. So that's another common link that we have.
Where?
In Scotch Plains is where I went, where I graduated from. So a little bit south of Paterson. It's Union County, I guess that's Bergen County.
Okay.
Right around Newark. So right around.
Oh, okay. That. Yep. Yep.
And I went to Rutgers. So,
okay.
So that was good. And then, but I at that point I joke because I think all my problems with that were that I was from New Jersey. So I graduated from college and I moved to, first I did an internship on the Hopi Indian Reservation.
That oh, wow. Great.
And then I moved to California, and there, you know, what we say in the 12-step recovery is I hit my bottom out there, and while still working, you know, not anything like that, but so I went. I'll tell you the real story. So, I was living with this guy. And for my background, I didn't think it was a good idea. So I there was a guy that I had been roommates with. There were two guys and me. And one guy was a male exotic dancer. And the other guy was a born again Christian.
Wow. Oh, man.
So Tim Thomas, the born again Christian, if he ever hears this, you know, he's a big part of my life, invited my boyfriend and I at the time to go to a sunrise service at Calvary Chapel on the pier in Huntington Beach. And I did. And, you know, I thought it was wonderful. And at that time, and then things started boiling, like, you know, this relationship wasn't going well, you know, all this stuff. So I started going to Calvary Chapel, and but I would go on Monday nights, not on Sunday. And I would go on Monday nights, and they would have a band and all that kind of stuff. And as soon as whatever his name was started talking, I would leave. And all I would do is stay for the music and cry.
Wow.
And then someone there said to me, I see you every week and you always leave. What are you avoiding? And I never went back.
I'm avoiding you. I won't make this mistake twice.
So, and this is the roundabout way of talking about Jordan Peterson, because here I was, I left that boyfriend. I was going to Calvary Chapel, and then I went, I can't remember, some other place. And I was trying to live a good life, but I couldn't stop drinking. And I was baptized in the Pacific Ocean at sunrise with the second worst hangover I ever had. And I didn't know what was wrong, you know? So part of it, what that was wrong is that I need to get sober. So that was what I needed to do. But it also, not just to, in order to have any relationship with God that was going to work, there was a lot of stuff that needed to get cleaned out before then, because, you know, I believe most people who suffer with that, like I do, are really so narcissistic at heart and closed off that all the words that come in are refracted in a way that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. So either they're too harsh, or they're too, you know, it nothing penetrated that was going to last.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of things had to be torn out and rebuilt over again. And a lot of that has to do with psychology, you know, a lot of it has to do with ego breaking and things like that. And I do believe that the 12-step programs are the absolute, you know, if you want it, it's all there.
Yeah.
So that's spiritual kindergarten for me, because I couldn't, you know, I would go off on wild tangents at church, you know, like I have to, you know, I have to quit my job and do this, or, you know, no, I have to be, I have to be my life, you know. Anyway, so I went, then I went to a mega church, one of the earliest mega churches in the late 80s. And then I met my husband as a result of doing all this wonderful stuff. And I hope he never hears this, because it was a bit of missionary dating. And you said that churches would be empty without missionary dating.
There's a lot of truth to that. That
really cleared up a lot of guilt that I had.
There's a lot of truth to that. There's a fair amount of missionary dating, and the pastors are all saying, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Yeah. But
well, the truth is,
it's okay.
The truth is that my husband is a better person than I am, and he's a more moral person than I am. And, you know, and it's amazing. So we left California because he wanted to finish his training back here. And we're in Connecticut. The leaves are changing. It's beautiful now, although I'd give anything to be back in California, but
better weather. Yeah. I've lived both places.
Yeah. Better in California.
Yeah.
So where was I? So we moved back, and there are no, I went to a mega church that was evangelical, but the pastor's name was Tim Timmons, and he was a wonderful, you remind me of him, because this idea that you couldn't put him in a box and you can't put you in a box either. So I think that's really helpful. So we came back here, no mega churches, can't really find what I'm looking for. There are mega churches here now, but my husband was raised congregational, and
in New England?
In New England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so we started going to a congregational church, and he got very involved, and, you know, is, you know, and we're a church going couple, which is pretty neat.
Okay. Okay.
So, but what I wanted to talk to you about was, your conversation with Nick and the CRC, you know, why can't the CRC get along?
Yeah.
So, this is what I emailed you about. So there are two things I want to come back to. One is the idea of seeking God that he mentioned, right? And the other one is, I want to ask you the question of how much do you think children influence their parents when it comes to stuff like this?
Oh, wow. It's almost always the other way around, but that's a really good question. Because in a sense, you don't know. As a parent, you get to fit into God's role, and that changes perspectives of us as children of God. And so I think I just read an article. This divorce lawyer from someplace wrote two pieces in the New York Times, one in 2019, one just recently. Basically, the first piece, she basically said, she was unapologetic about loving her career more than her children. It's like,
I just saw that on Twitter. Yeah.
You posted. And then the other one about divorce, and it's like, okay. I guess your children didn't change you much. And that, I think, has been true often for men.
Mm-hmm.
Because men have sort of delegated parenting and relating to the children to the mothers and wives for years. But, you know, that has sort of, you know, there's been a revolution against that. And now for a father to not be involved is a violation against all sorts of things now. So men are quite a bit more involved. And I think that's healthy all the way around. But children do change us. They, we love them, hopefully. They humble us. Oh, they humble. I remember when... You know, I thought getting married was a lesson in just how selfish I was. Nothing like the kids. Yeah. They were their most brutal teachers. Cause you know, when we had one kid, it's like, you know, it's your turn. No, it's your turn. And then you have two kids. And so you have one for each of us. Then you have three kids. And after three, it's just all a lost cause. It's all hands on deck. So, and then they, I mean, you do, you love them. If you're a decent parent of any kind, you sacrifice for them. They defy you sometimes. Sometimes when they don't defy you and you recognize maybe they should have, that really breaks your heart because you find out what a crappy God your children have. And then of course they grow up and they're going to do their own things. And, you know, some are going to rebel in their own way to one degree or another. I've been wanting to make a video for a while about this to one degree or another, because I don't know. If I try to imagine not having had children, I don't know what that would be like. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most challenging, difficult, meaningful things that has been a part of my life. And I'm not saying you can't be fully human if you haven't had it, by no means, but wow. So mm-hmm. Yeah. Children influence their parents.
Yeah, I was thinking, I know my daughters influenced me, you know, it changed my life really dramatically. But I was thinking of, you know, I was telling you all those wild stories about my youth, you know, and my parents got divorced, and there's an interesting story about that I want to tell you. So so my dad was, you know, he was in the Navy and stuff like that, and he always wore like khaki pants and a t-shirt and stuff. And so we were like, Dad, you need to get like a cowboy hat and jeans, and you know, we were trying to do a makeover on him and stuff like that. And you know, and I had it was my life was full of pleasure. And, you know, I mean, I was out there living life, and they were very 50s kind of people. And when all of the, I have two brothers, and when we were all in college, he left my mom for another woman. Oh, wow. And only lately have I thought, I wonder if I had anything to do with like opening that Pandora's box, you know? And I'm thinking now about the things about what you and Nick talked about, the idea of, I know that was a sibling, but I know a lot in our church, it's kids who, you know, and their journeys that change the parents' ideas.
Yeah.
But I want to tell you what happened. I wrote a little bit about this, but this woman said, in the thing that you just said in the Times, that something like she couldn't live her full life if she was still married. And my father, who's very Catholic, said, I don't care if I go to hell. That's what he said. Okay. So he married this other woman, and it was a real, really contentious divorce. It was awful. You know, my mother did not want to get divorced, but you know, he moved on, and you know, and she was older, you know, an older woman, so he didn't have other kids or anything. But I want to say maybe 8 years later or something like that, maybe it was 10 years later, he called and asked me, and you know, now I'm not a Catholic anymore, you know, I'm and he asked me, what do you think if I got an annulment? And I said, well,
from the second marriage?
From the first marriage, from my mother.
Oh, and okay.
They were divorced, you know.
Okay.
So that he could marry his second wife in the church.
In the church.
So I said, well, you know, that, so your kids are bastards? And he goes, no, it's not like that anymore, you know? And I said, well, you know, I think there are your rules, and I don't think you should, after 23 years of marriage and three kids, you should get an annulment. And I also didn't think that, you know, it would be fair to put my mother through that thing. So, so it came in the family lore that, that I stopped them from getting an annulment. So, anyway, a couple years go by and he dies. And at the funeral, now, you know, if you're a Catholic, you can't receive communion. You can, he went to church. They went to church every Sunday. They, he was a reader, all kinds of stuff, but no communion. So the Monsignor says to me, I don't know why, well, you know, at the end, you know, we got your father the communion. And I'm thinking, did he get a secret annulment? What happened? So my stepmother told me when I asked her, and it must have been a couple of years later, that they had agreed to live celibately in order to be received back into the communion with the Catholic Church. And most people would think that that was insane. Yeah. I don't tell many people.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about your conversation with Nick and this idea of seeking God, right? Because my church would go out of business if the Catholic Church allowed divorced people full communion. There would be no church.
I believe it.
Right? And but why would you do that? Why would a person do that? And I read a little bit of Nick's comments, and you know, it's like the prodigal son and all that kind of stuff. And he was in the Catholic Church a prodigal son. But my stepmother said that he knew he was gonna die. And he died in the back of the church, getting ready to process up the aisle to read during mass. And he had a coronary.
Oh my goodness.
He died in the back of the church. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So would I do that? No, I didn't even go to that church.
Yeah. You know, this is part of why, you know, issues. And I'm so, you know, your story illustrates nicely that, you know, the same-sex marriage debate isn't the only issue that sort of confounds us on both sides. If you take it slowly and seriously, and divorce and remarriage has been an issue like that for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was probably flippant on Twitter, which is, you know, maybe I should get off Twitter, because that's, Twitter tempts you to flippancy. But, you know, even in just sort of the jaw-dropping brazenness of this woman's New York Times opinion pieces, mm-hmm. you know that there are, well, I think your story of your father's story is one like this. And I've seen stories, not identical to it, but analogous in some ways, of deeply believing people, you know, violating serious tenets of their faith and persevering still, mm-hmm. and are finding themselves in situations and traps that they in one way they'll have to sin in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they choose. And then to you know, seek God and aspire once again to faithfulness, even though you've taken a road that appears to lead to perdition. And these things happen around us. We see them. And if we have eyes to see them, and we only see them in people who, as your story nicely illustrated, you know, seek God with all their hearts, even as sinners. And, you know, I see I did an interview with a guy just recently. It'll be out in a little while, I guess, about homeless people. And, you know, I see this all the time with the homeless, people who have serious problems, mental illness, serious, you know, they do not maintain sobriety at all. And often it doesn't look like they're even trying. But if you sit down with them and listen to them, part of them hungers and thirsts for righteousness. And, you know, you just can't imagine they will ever see it in this world. That's a powerful story of your father. What did your mother make of this?
I haven't told her. Well, no, I haven't told her. She died.
Is she still alive?
No. They're both gone. I haven't told my brothers or anyone. It seems so personal.
Yeah.
And you know, and what's interesting now is that while not having a relationship with my stepmother, it's a cordial relationship. I'm now in charge of her health care and finances and things like that. It's really, really interesting. The divorce is very bad, and my mother really pushed us to take sides. And we were adults, you know, we were in college. Yeah. And it was awful. I almost think that you can't even figure this stuff out until you've lived a long time, and then you can't even figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, just
Ignorance breeds a sort of clarity that unfortunately is handed a megaphone too many times in this world. Yeah. Partly because right now megaphones are so abundantly available to anyone with a social media account.
Exactly.
Oh, you know, and, you know, even just, you know, the psychology of, you know, even just the psychology of an affair and a betrayal. And, you know, they often talk about, you know, marriages being, you know, they're basically a mysterious country only of two. And, you know, even the two that are in it by no means understand it. I mean, I've been married 33 years, and you know, it's amazing sometimes how even couples who have been married for a very long time just continue to surprise and confound and bewilder each other. But I see couples of 60 plus years doing it.
I hope to be among that. I mean, I'm not going to live that long because I got married later, but I hope that's the case, because I keep getting surprised.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. You know, another thing about my husband, his sister is schizophrenic, and he is, well, we're both, but he's been her conservator since his mom died. And it's tough, and he keeps a roof over her head and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's great. She doesn't live with us. And thank God she doesn't do drugs or anything like that. But it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. There was a woman in this church who she was here before I got here, and she passed away maybe 10, 15 years ago now. So she was in the church quite a while when I was here. I never quite understood what exactly was going on with her, but she was a schizophrenic. She took her medication mostly through the help of many of the women in this church, managed to achieve the ability to live on her own. The women in this church and her brother, she had a brother who, you know, really looked out for her and took care of her when the parents died, similar story. And then when she died, I had never met her brother until she died. And then he came up here to sort of manage things and had a chance to talk to him. And I know so many schizophrenics, mm-hmm. and their families, mm-hmm. and it doesn't, you know, again, there's so much in this world that for all of the pretense of our power and our ability to somehow fix things, there's just abundant examples that we can't and we don't.
You know, I've listened to, I think you did something on, people were talking with you about homelessness and about mental illness and things. And it was so interesting when people, you can tell people have no idea.
Yeah.
They're just giving, you know, well, you should do this, you should do that. And it's like, no, you don't, you don't get it. You don't, no, there's, you know, and people will say, well, why don't you put her somewhere? And I'm like, would that there were a place.
Yeah.
But that's long gone.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I learned from her early on, is that we must have a soul, because I know that God loves her as much as he loves me, but it can't be through her brain.
Yeah.
It can't be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So gotta be something else.
Yeah.
That was very comforting to me.
There was a family that was another. So where I grew up in New Jersey, when I was growing up, there were a pretty good, healthy cluster of Christian Reformed churches. And so ministers' families are always sort of different, because in the community, the pastors are different. And so there was another minister's family, had three daughters. And the oldest daughter, she was in high school, and she was about a year ahead of me or so. And she was very boisterous, charismatic, fun. And everybody knew, it was a very large high school, Eastern Christian. Everybody knew her. And I knew the middle sister the best. And then the youngest sister I got to know too. We're all involved in drama. And Facebook came about, and suddenly you get reconnected with people I hadn't talked to for 20 years. And I found my friends, and then I asked about, you know, the other siblings. So what happened to your oldest sister? And she just said, you know, after when she was in college, she came down with schizophrenia. And then I, of course, having done all that I've done here, I knew I had a picture of what that family went through, and how there were no solutions, and how no matter what you try, everything you try to express love to her and to make her life better, it's a half measure at best. And, you know, maybe she'll stay on the medications, and that will help to a degree. You know, it'll help to a degree. Mm-hmm. Usually a lot of the medications will, well, you're a pharmacist, a lot of the medications basically sort of take the edge off and achieve a degree of sociality mm-hmm. in the person. Doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to flourish, but just that they won't be quite so chaotic to their loved ones who desperately want to do something for them. And yeah. Schizophrenia can sometimes be just such a totalizing disability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a caregiver who goes in a couple times a week. But it has to be a very special person, obviously.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the only thing, you can't touch anything in the house, you know. The only thing we want is for people to be in touch with her and take her shopping. And because it can't, trying to make things better makes things worse a lot of times. But she's been able to live on her own for 10 years now, which is really quite amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
But she's like, I mean, she's also 68 years old. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and when they get older, you know, I've seen that too.
Well, like you said, the one who's living on the street, that's yeah. It takes its toll as you get older.
Yeah.
A lot more than when you're younger.
Yeah. Yeah. The woman in this church, she basically she died, she was living alone. She had to take her medication just sort of in the right way. Otherwise, certain side effects would come up. And she basically fell and sort of was immobilized and, you know, died on the floor of her apartment. And she actually didn't die. Neighbors noticed she wasn't, you know, called the police. They came in. But by that point, she was then hospitalized for a couple of weeks and then she passed. She could never recover. But and it's what's so difficult about this is. So then, you know, the brother contacted me and we had some good conversations and we put together the service for her. And it was a lovely service. And the stories came out that I had never heard before. Mm-hmm. And but you're always just so. I don't know how people who are not Christians deal with this, frankly, because. So on one hand, with her death, there's a sense of relief that her loved ones have because they know her suffering. And with her death, they sense, okay, her suffering's over. They're still grieving. They still miss her. But, you know, at least for her, like you say, I mean, all of us believed, you know, for all of her slightly crazy ideas about God and us, and you know, she still came to church very faithfully. But, you know, we all believe that at this point now she is relieved of her disorder and she is flourishing like she never has. And with the resurrection, that is only going to get more. And so, you know, I can tell this story and I can remember her and her struggles, but it's such a hopeful memory because I believe when I see her again, I will see a creature very different from the one I saw here.
Absolutely.
We had a family in the church that had a little boy with severe autism. Mm-hmm. And the church for many years did their best to, you know, they kept him at home and, you know, the whole thing. And I remember having a dream one night of, his name is Jacob, and having a conversation with Jacob, and you know, because he couldn't talk, and you know, again, I, you know, people in this crazy YouTube land sometimes wonder, you know, how I can see so much of the rough parts of the world and still be a Christian, and I just look at it the other way. How can you see this world and tolerate it without being a Christian? That I don't understand. Right. Because I have hope.
Yeah. You know, if there's one part about being a Catholic that I miss, it's Catholic funerals. Mm. Because they're all about the resurrection and what is to come. And and if there's one thing about at least the church I'm going to now, I don't want to badmouth it. I've written to you that you're the one who keeps me in my church. What I love is that you know, to be a part of it. And that's, I am. I've been here, you know, been here 27 years. Yeah. And I've done a lot of things in the church. But We're the very liberal denomination. We might be the most liberal denomination, but my church is a conservative enclave in that, although that's breaking apart now. Yeah. And I would go with almost any of the progressive stuff that they want to do. If they would keep Jesus in the center and the resurrection, you know, and I mentioned that to one pastor, and the response was, well, I don't want to talk about, you know, in the sky by and by, we have to talk about here. And I thought, I everything else is talking about here. And I don't, the only thing that makes any sense is what you said. It's the only thing that makes sense. Otherwise, there's no, and when you see progress, you don't know what that progress is going to lead, just like Chesterton's fence, right? You don't know.
Yeah.
And the best intentions of all that, without Jesus and the resurrection, however you know that you're saved or you're, however that works out, that's the point that's missing for me in all of this discussion.
Yeah. I guess part of what I learned, you know, right after seminary, my wife and I went to the Dominican Republic, and I spent 6 years there working with Haitians. And part of what I learned there was all of our best intentioned efforts fall so far short. And I'm blessed to be able to work in, to be able to live and work my whole life in contexts where in some ways the deceptions of all of our solutions are exposed as, you know, if this is what we got, you know, praise God for it, you know,
right, absolutely.
Praise God for it. But absolutely. I do believe that we are meant, and this world is meant for so much more. Mm-hmm. And to just call that a myth, an inspiring myth, to me is insufficient. So
that's how I feel. I have one more Catholic story to tell you, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
So my daughter and I, we lived 3 years in Germany. So we worked for the army in Germany, and my daughter and I took a trip to Rome. And so we went to St. Peter's, and they have confessionals set up all over. So my daughter says, hey mom, you're Catholic. Why don't you go to confession? So I'm like, yeah, I still have some anger at my mother. Maybe I'll go to confession. So I go to the English speaking one and this is one of the most beautiful phrases in the whole world. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Bless me because I've sinned.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So I go in and I say, yeah, you know, I'm angry. I had this resentment against my mother. And he says, well, you go to church? And I go, no, I don't. I go to congregational church. And he goes, well, you need to come back to the church. And I said, well, you know, my husband and my daughter. And he said, do you think this is a joke? And I thought to myself, he's right. What am I doing here? You know, like my father, you know, the idea that the communion was so important to him, and I was just playing around.
Yeah.
And I think most people, if you said that, would get really indignant. And I was like, no, that's right.
Yeah.
And I left no longer a Catholic. You know, my stepmother said to me one time when I went up to communion, meanwhile, they can't go to communion, but what do? I go to communion?
Yeah.
You know, I just think we talk a lot about respect and all that stuff. And I was like, no, you can't exclude me. No, no, you don't belong here anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But you can't take the Catholic out of the girl, though.
Just no. I've seen that before. Just like if you watch any of Paul Schrader's movie, you can't take the Christian Reformed Church out of the boy.
I have a friend who will not watch movies with me because we watched a Paul Schrader movie.
Which one?
The one about the couple in Europe who get drugged. Never see this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's so awful. So he's got a lot of issues. And this last one was just the one about the minister.
First Reformed.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen, what was the one, Calvary? Have you ever seen Calvary?
No, it's on my list. I've not watched it yet.
You have to see this movie. And you've got to do something, because my husband hated it because the people don't seem real.
Yeah.
But I think you'll really like it. It's a wonderful movie.
It's on the list. It comes up, and one of these times I have to watch it. I have to. I most of my media viewing is, if I can't find another family member to agree to something, it almost doesn't get watched. So that's how I wind up watching Bachelor in Paradise and things like this, which is it's cultural literacy.
Absolutely. If it wasn't for my daughter, I wouldn't know anything about TikTok. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, this was certainly a treat. I will send you the link to this video and you can look at it and you can show it to anyone you want. If you'd like me to share it, I'd be happy to share it. If you don't want to do anything with it, that's fine too.
I will let you know.
That's the routine.
Okay.
Well,
thanks for your time, Paul. You're amazing. And I want you to know that you really, you have made me, I'm a very poor Christian, but you've made me a better Christian. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. That means a lot to me. Take care. Bye-bye.